My name is Jill Meredith Wolf. I'm 37 years old. Today is January 14th, 2017. I'm at the Chicago Cultural Center with my friend and fellow advocate.
And my name is Sam Dorlock. I am 64 years old. And today is January 14th. And I also am at the Chicago Cultural Center with my friend and fellow advocate, Jill Wolf.
Hey, Sammy. So glad that you could be here today. And we found some time before you leave this windy city to sit down and talk about you. We met, it was probably a little less than a year ago, And I remember we met at a town hall meeting. And I'm curious what you remember about it. What brought you to that town hall meeting? What sticks out?
Well, what brought me to the meeting was being a Hep C survivor. I wanted to give back to, I just wanted to give back in some sense, in some way. I had come along at a time, you know, I discovered my Hep C at a time when they had this new medicine out, and I didn't have a lot of trouble getting it because I was sick enough to get it, which, anyway, and I got cured, and I was and am looking for avenues, you know, that I can give back, and this was a town hall meeting given by some doctors at the U of I, maybe, I don't even recall. And I got up and said something in response to something, and you approached me afterwards and asked me if, I think I ridden my motorcycle down because I must have hit on my bike or
gear. You had your Harley stuff on, yeah.
You approached me and said, hey, you want to get some bikers tested? And I do, and I did, and that's one of the things that, it's something I've been thinking about doing, and that's where we started.
Yeah, and I remember, you know, I extend my, as a social worker in my job, I extend myself to a lot of people, but not always do people reach back, and you reached back because you had an interest, and you had something else you wanted to do, and you stayed in touch with me, and we worked together through the summertime, and you got people, you did good, you got people in to get tested.
Yes.
Yeah. You told me that you were sick enough to get cured. Are you still sick? What does that feel like for you? And tell me about that.
Well, no, I'm not sick. And in fact, I'm one of those that didn't know I was sick. I didn't have any symptoms. I was just in my doctor's office for a regular physical. And he said, you know, we haven't done any blood work in a while. And I said, well, do it and test for everything. And he kind of said, well, knowing you, you know, I'm afraid to do that. And we laughed. And then about it, well, he did test for everything. And about a week later, he called me, and he wasn't laughing. Mm. And he said I had Hep C, and I needed to go see a specialist. And just to fast forward, maybe a week or two later, I found out that, yeah, I had Hep C and very high viral loads. And as a little bonus, I had cirrhosis of the liver.
Mm.
And, you know, I was over the threshold. You know, the new medicines are hard to get, and or were at that time. I'm not sure how hard they are now. But I was sick enough that I didn't have to jump over too many hurdles to get it. And I got it. And if ever there was a miracle drug, and I'm not sitting here trying to push this drug, but it is, and I got cured, and I want to give back.
And you didn't even know you were sick, like you said.
No, I did not know I was sick.
But now that you're cured, and if you look back to when you were sick, what's different? Do you feel different now? Is your perspective different?
Physically, I feel the same. But I'm in pretty good shape generally, regardless, but my perspective is quite different because, you know, even though I didn't feel sick, what I didn't know is that I was on the threshold. If I had kept going undetected, I could have been very sick very soon thereafter. Maybe past the point where I could have been successfully treated.
You know, Sammy, you talked about being in the doctor's office, and he said, well, knowing you, we should test you for everything, right? What does that mean, knowing you, we should test you for everything?
Well, I have a little history with alcohol and recreational drug use, even though that's been quite a few years. This doctor that I'm seeing now has been with me through all that.
Long time then.
It's been a while. I've been sober going on about 20 years.
It's amazing.
It is.
It is amazing. Congrats. Good work. Keep it up.
Thank you.
But enough that you have a relationship with your doctor that you could say, hey, doc, this is what I did or do. And a lot of people aren't honest because recreational drug use and alcohol, I mean, everyone to a certain degree uses alcohol or recreational drugs.
Well, you know, they say don't lie to your lawyer or your doctor. But your doctor, you can't lie to, even if you wanted to. The proof is in the pudding. You take your blood tests and your liver enzymes are through the roof. They didn't get that way for nothing. And they know.
Yeah.
Even if you wanted to withhold, they know.
You know, Sammy, I'm first of all, I'm really glad that you have a doctor that you like that knew enough about your history to say, all right, man, like, we know you, so let's test you for all this stuff. Thanks for sharing that, because maybe you wouldn't be sitting here in front of me sharing your story. And like you said, you were on this threshold, right, of you had cirrhosis and didn't know it. And just a little bit earlier today, we talked about times in your life where you've dodged bullets, right, and curing yourself of this hep C. Was one bullet that you dodged to a certain degree, even though you have hep C. Tell me a little bit about bullets.
Dodging the hep C bullet was probably the last of many bullets. But I have dodged many bullets in my life. Probably the first one was just not ending up in prison. I was as a teenager, I was young and wild and ran the streets and hung with gangs and did drugs, and I could have very easily been another statistic, and but that didn't happen.
Why?
I'm not sure why, but I can remember what happened. You know, I was in jail.
How old were you, Sammy?
Oh, I was maybe 18, going on 19, and since the age of 17, I had been in and out of jail just all the time, and maybe I was 20 then, and I came to the realization, looking at some of the older inmates, I came to the realization that, you know, if I kept doing what I was doing, you know, I was going to be just like them, you know, and there were guys in there that were 40, 50 years old, and they were just, they had spent their whole lives in and out of the, you know, jail, like going through a revolving door. And I knew I didn't want to spend the rest of my life locked up. And I didn't know what I wanted, but I knew I didn't want that. So when I was in there, I got a GED and signed up with some rehab program, and when I got out, I went to, got in school, went to junior college, and went in another direction. So that was a bullet I dodged.
Hmm. when you got out and went to, you know, you got your GED and kept moving, was there anyone in your life, besides these images of these 40-year-old men who had been in and out of jail, were there any other supports that helped pull you through to complete this education or keep moving forward?
Well, in a sense, maybe the biggest support was just that I had my eyes open and I was seeing the world around me, and so I was seeing a different world around me.
And do you think the factor was just that you were older and a little bit wiser, that you couldn't see this at 14, 15, 16, 17, or what? Was there something else that changed?
I wasn't too wise, but I'm not sure. I can only tell you what happened. I can't tell you why.
Tell me what happened.
What happened is I started going to school. I went down here at Loop Junior College. They call it Harold Washington College now. And, you know, I was, again, I had dropped out of high school. I was out of jail. I was 20, maybe 21, 20, but I was probably 13 in my emotional makeup. I was shy and awkward and terrified, even though, you know, I'd never let you know at that time. And I started going to school, and things started happening in oddest ways. One of the first things that happened is there were classes that you have to take. You have to take English 101. You have to take speech 101. And both of those, just horrified me. I didn't like to write. I hated to scrawl my name. And and the fact of getting up, I mean, the thought of getting up in front of people and talking just, it terrified me. So, and I remember the first day of that speech 101 class, and there was a woman named Mrs. Schiff teaching it, and she said, "This class is going to change your life," and it did. And she got up. I don't remember exactly how she did or what she said, but she taught us how to outline a speech, how to, you know, write down and formulate your ideas, outline the speech, get up and say it, and I found out that I had a knack for it. And when I got up to do my first speech, I spent so much time at home getting ready for this thing, and I had it outlined so well, and I did it on birth control. And I went across the street to Planned Parenthood, and I got all the props. I had condoms, I had pills, I had injectors with the foam, and I had it all. And I did this speech on poor Mrs. Schiff. She was rather embarrassed, but I did this speech on birth control, and it just came off wonderfully. And
you learned something in the process.
I got an A in it, but more importantly, what it did was it gave me a little bit of confidence, a little bit of self-esteem, a little bit. It just gave me some things that I didn't have, and it made me want to do more. And
what did it teach you, that whole process of preparing and studying and going and learning about these different options? What did it teach you about yourself in terms of what you're good at?
Well, it taught me that, well, that's hard to articulate, but it gave me confidence. It told me that, hey, there's something. Hey, you can do something here besides just nothing.
Well, and, Sammy, this was obviously like 40-some-odd years ago. I wasn't alive at the time, but I almost envision you standing in front of this class of other students who probably really needed this information that you were giving them, right? I mean, you were doing advocates' work even then, right? I can almost envision these faces of the students really lighting up and excited and leaning into what you're talking about. Do you remember presenting? Do you remember being up there and doing the presentation?
Oh, like it was yesterday.
Tell me about, like, what would you see, the faces of people? What do you remember?
Well, as soon as I started putting all my props on the podium in front of me, and Mrs. Schiff had announced that I was doing a presentation on birth control, you know, people were giggling. This was the 70s, so it wasn't, we were kind of in between.
It's like a culture shift going on at that time, huh?
Yeah,
like,
but not terribly. I mean, there was, we were out of the sex, drugs, and rock and roll of the 60s, but it was accepted very well, and people were just at ease, and the overall spirit was very good.
I wish I would have been in that class listening to that, Sammy. That would have been fun. We don't use spermicide anymore, like the foam. That's, but it's been what, how many years since then? So we've come a long way in birth control, I hope. So, you know, as we talk about this theme of bullets and dodging bullets, it sounds like this class, like you said, it changed your life. What potential bullet did that class help you dodge that you didn't even know you were dodging, maybe?
Probably the bullet of just being self-relegated to not having much future.
So take me a little further then. You've got this early 20-year-old who just stood up in front of a class and realized, holy shit, I can do this. I'm actually pretty good at this, right? This class was a change agent in your life. What then happened? What other kind of things did you come across that changed
it
you?
It wasn't just the class. I was going through a lot of things were change agents, you know. One other thing, though, was that English class that I had to take. You know, I went into English, which was something else that I wasn't looking forward to, and the teacher was an old school marm type from the Midwest somewhere, and I don't recall her name, but she sat there with her little old-fashioned looking dress and her hair tied up in a bun, and she says, I'm going to teach you how to write. And she taught us how to make paragraphs and have your sentence. And the first one first essay that I turned in, she came up. She says, no, this isn't how you do it. You have to write this one sentence and then follow up everything else in that paragraph has to support that sentence. And so I sat back down and I tried it, and I did it, and it worked. And then I started doing assignments at home, and I found out that I could write. And I started writing, and these essays, I found so much enjoyment in doing it, and I was starting to get a feeling that, hey, I can do things. I can create nice things and good things. I can, you know, I didn't look at it that way then, but I can be productive. You know, I was finding out that I can be productive and that I can contribute. You know, I can contribute good things, nice things to the world that I never knew I could. And I got that little old lady school mom to thank for the writing aspect of it. And I started writing long essays and term papers. And a funny thing that happened right through then is my handwriting got good.
I was going to say, I love how you sign your name.
But I used to have terrible, before that I had terrible handwriting because writing was such a chore and it was not something I wanted to do in my it was so laborious just to write
forced.
My name.
Yeah.
It was like chicken scratch. And as I started liking to write, I found myself unconsciously writing. It was more, it's like my handwriting started to flourish and just.
Well, there's a flow to your hand. I watched you sign your name today, and there's no force to this, your writing. It flows out of you, and it's loopy and it's beautiful. Actually, I've got your signature right in front of me. I mean, I love your signature.
Well, I was probably feeling beautiful.
You look beautiful too, Sammy. I got to tell you, you look beautiful. You know, I'm curious. You mentioned twice, so. We've got this with Planned Parenthood that, what is that called again? You did a presentation on
birth control.
Birth control. Oh my gosh, sorry. Birth control, and then you had this class, right? And you talk about going home and working on this stuff. What was home like at that time?
At that time, I just rented a room in the home of a relative. But it was actually a pretty quiet place. He worked. It was an uncle. He worked nights and wasn't there most of the time. And I had no one else there was in the house, and I was able to just, you know, I had a place to myself, and I could read and study and do things.
Did you have family members or friends or other people that you were in school with or something that you remember being supportive?
I didn't have a whole lot of friends because most of my older friends I had to let go because they were still out in the street on the corners and I hadn't made too many newer friends yet. So there was a time through there where I didn't have a whole lot of friends.
Did you find it hard to not go hang out back with the old friends?
Sometimes.
Yeah. What kept you from not going to hang back out with them?
Just being busy with my new direction.
New direction.
You can stand up or you can sit down, but you can't stand up and sit down at the same time. And
so did you stand up or sit down?
I stood up.
You stood up. Tell me where you went.
Well, I finished school. I got a job. Oddly enough, I finished junior college, but I went into trade school. I sort of had a knack for technical things, and mm-hmm. I went to trade school, and I've been working all my life.
Any specialties?
I was an electrician.
Hmm. You still do that?
Not if I can help it.
Not if you can help it. I was going to say, I got a dimmer switch I need some help with. I'm kidding.
I'm retired.
You're retired. What does that mean for you today? I mean, what direction... Are you standing up or sitting down? I mean, right now you're sitting down, but literally or figuratively.
Oh, I'm still standing up. I haven't sat down yet.
And so I guess I think of one thing, knowing that you're standing up. You're either standing up or you're riding your Harley. And this summer, it was so cool to be part of this. You brought one of your Harley friends. We had an event that you worked with me at. You know, come to think of it, your speech class did help because if I remember in all of these events we did together, I mean, you were the one out there talking to everybody and telling everybody that they had to come over to the booth and get tested. So thank you, Ms. Schiff. helped me. And it also helped a friend of yours who you convinced to meet you at this event. And he came and he and I talked and I tested him and you had this hunch that he had hep C. You just knew it. And you were right. And that was probably June, July, August of 2016, maybe. And you and I kind of became part of his team. And me more remote. I went to the outfield and you went in to the infield with him. And you walked him through, answered every question. And I made sure to stay in touch with him. And every time I'd reach out to him, Sammy had it. You know, like you had answered his question or you had gone to the doctor with him or whatever it was. And I was just smiling. I think it was great. And today, because of you, he stands cured. And he dodged a bullet that you jumped in front of him and took that bullet for him in a way. Do you know that?
I don't know if I took the bullet.
Well, not took it.
Him,
I mean,
but I helped him dodge his.
It. You pulled him out the way.
Yes, he was like many people, who either have Hep C or think they might have and don't want to know for sure, but are really reluctant. I think he knew that he had Hep C, and if he didn't know for sure, he suspected it, and so did I. But he was procrastinating about getting tested for it, and because that means facing an undeniable reality of it, and. There's a lot of people that have Hep C and don't know it. I think there's a lot of people that have Hep C and kind of know it. Some have it and do know it, but they're still real hesitant to get treated. And it's a lot of reasons. You know, one reason is that Hep C is often not symptomatic. So if you feel okay, why treat it? If it's not bothering you, why treat it? And some people believe there's a lot of myths, you know, that Hep C lays dormant. You know, it doesn't. It's silent, but it does not lay dormant. So for a lot of reasons, a lot of people don't get tested, and this individual we're talking about was one of them, and we just gave him a little push. And that's something that I want to devote at least, you know, part of my life and energy to going forward, is raising awareness of Hep C and getting people to get tested and get cured. You know, there are new medicines. You know, that's another reason why people are reluctant to address their Hep C, because it means they got to get treated. And in the past, getting treated meant taking this horrible, horrible interferon-based medicine, which is just as bad as any chemotherapy for cancer. It is a form of chemotherapy. And it was only 33% successful. So you can understand why a lot of people would be reluctant, but the new medicines are very, very, very successful, and I'm not trying to sit here and promote them, but they are very successful, and the side effects are almost nothing, and they're certainly nothing compared to the side effects of the older ones.
Yeah, and luckily you were able to get the ear of our friend to get tested. And I know that you are a biker and you are involved in, you know, biker crews and bunches of people who maybe your instinct tells you that they're they certainly are at risk just because of their age. But how do you take some of these skills that Ms. Schiff gave you and what you learned that you could do? And here you are sort of one in this sea of bikers. How do you spread this word and get more people like our friend back in to get tested and cured?
Well, I'm working on that. But again, bikers, the biker community aside from a lot of your younger bikers riding around on these sport bikes, most of your biker community in this country are baby boomers.
Yeah.
And baby boomers, because of medical practices or lack thereof in the 50s and 60s and the drug cultures of the 60s, baby boomers, by and large, are the most
largest impacted group.
Likely,
yeah.
Or impacted group of people. And that's where, you know, you go in a Harley-Davidson dealer, most of your people in there buying bikes are baby boomers.
And do you find they'll listen to your message?
Well, that has yet to be seen. But that's something that I want to do. My life is in limbo right now for different reasons, but I plan on when I get through that, I want to try and promote awareness in the motorcycle community, in the biker community, and that is going to be done by just setting up events like the ones that you do with Caring Ambassadors and at swap meets and bike rallies and it's going to take some legwork but that's what I want to do.
Well, Sammy, I will help you do that. I think that there's many ways in which that can happen, and using your skills and my skills together and really getting the word in there or out there. We can do that together, and I'd be happy to assist you doing that while your life is in limbo or not in limbo. So we can keep thinking about how we'll move forward with that. And sort of that brings me to this question of sort of knowing you and talking with you a little bit earlier about this young man, this is before Mischief's class. So this young man who you said in your own words to me earlier wasn't a nice person, went through, in and out of jail, kind of was able to see, I don't want to keep doing this, and I'm going to make a choice to stand up. And fast forward however many years, you're standing in front of me today at 64. How do you want to continue this do-good trajectory that you're on? And dream with me here. I mean, you don't have to have the answer of this is exactly what I'm going to do, but dream with me on how we can continue doing this growth work that you are doing and dodging bullets or helping people get out of the way of bullets.
Well, I'm just going to continue doing what I'm doing. And again, when my life is no longer in limbo, I will have the wherewithal and the energy to, and lack of distraction where I can focus on not only raising awareness, Hep C, but there's other areas in my life that I want to, I write short stories, and I'm involved in storytelling groups and activities, and I want to, I really want to develop there, and I want to, I like to write, and I've got a lot of writing. I may get some published. There's a lot of things I want to do. I got a long, long life in front of me. I got a lot of living to do.
Absolutely. Are there any particular stories, the first few off the top of your head that you're like, oh, this is what I want to share? As you work on, you obviously have a bunch of writing, but are there any priority stories that you really, of your own or others, that you want to get out there?
No.
Okay.
Sorry.
You don't have to apologize. It's not a, there's no right answer here.
Whatever can help somebody, or whatever can just bring somebody a couple of minutes of enjoyment. It's what I want to put out there.
Great. Well, there's a lot of people that need a lot of joy in their life, so keep doing it. Sammy, is there any other areas you want to make sure we touch on before we finish up this time together, this moment that we have? Is there anything that we didn't get to, anything that you want to share, ideas, thoughts, comments? No?
Not really.
No worries. It's not a trick question at all. I really appreciate you being here and sharing where you've come from and where you're headed to, and giving us some ideas and dodging those bullets and helping some other people dodge bullets as well. So as I've said, you know, however I can continue to help you do that, I will. So thanks for being here.
Well, thank you.